Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Mythic Gaming. I'm going to start with a very quick review that tells you how you too can ride Pegasus. During my lifetime, both Filmation and Disney granted their animated versions of Hercules a mythic steed with wings, namely Pegasus. What few know is that the ancients did pretty much the same, partnering one of the Pegasi, namely Arion, with a Hercules of myth. Now, thanks to Blue Angel Publishing, I too, a modern-day Hercules, can simply enjoy and benefit from the companionship of this beloved and iconic fabulous beast. The Pegasus Oracle is a 30-card deck conceived by Alana Fairchild, who also wrote the informative guidebook, and brought to life by the otherworldly art of the Caterina Golovarios. Pegasus is displayed in association with various mythic, symbolic, metaphysical, fantastic, and very colorful realms. Each card is a tool that can enhance your affirmations, focus your meditations, and stimulate your imagination. The deck more than serves its purpose as a themed oracle, both with or without the guidebook. I also plan to use it as a role-playing game aid in my mythic campaigns and as a portal to other realms in my guided visualization groups. Thanks to Anna Fairchild, Ekaterina Yanvanova, I'm sorry for mangling that name, Blue Angel Publishing, and Llewellyn Worldwide for bringing us the experience of riding Pegasus. I surely appreciate it, and onwards. And now I welcome Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings and welcome, O Mythic Gamers.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
We have some interference on the line.
See, is that better now?
Yeah, a little bit. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
So, what is new and exciting in the world of gaming?
So the last time that we spoke, I was talking about the new Magic set that was coming out.
Uh-huh.
Innistrad Midnight Hunt. Did that actually release the last time we talked, or was it the release coming up? I'm trying to remember.
I believe it either just released or was coming up. You discussed it at great length. I don't really recall, but you could tell
right.
us more about it now. I've seen it ourselves in stores.
Yeah, the set has been doing really well. People have been really receptive of it, and it's been moving pretty well. And the new standard format that it's part of is really healthy and fun. We started doing standard tournaments again on Saturdays. And those have been doing pretty well. So it's been super busy at the store as always, which is a good thing.
Yes, it is a good thing. Now
you had described
that there was going to be a vampire set as well. You said that it was werewolves and there were going to be vampires as well very soon too. Have the vampires come out yet?
Yep. So that's what I was about to say. So. It feels like, you know, I say it every time, like every time that we talk, I feel like there's a new Magic set coming out.
Yeah.
But this one is the next one that ties in with the werewolves and the vampires. It's called Innistrad Crimson Vow. I think they're releasing them, you know, close together because they kind of fit together and so that it fits thematically with the time that we're in. They released... a little bit more information about Crimson Vow. There's still no spoilers or anything yet. And I think by the time we talk next, it would have just come out. There's no spoilers yet. But the only thing that's really kind of been released in a little teaser is from a card actually from Midnight Hunt. There's a card depicting... There's two characters. It's Edgar Markov. He's like one of the main vampires, and Soren Markov, who's the grandson to Edgar. On the card, there's an empty casket with Soren standing next to it, saying, oh, somebody got here before me. So there's some story alluding to Edgar Markov coming back because he's been, you know, quote-unquote dead, if you will, for some time. So there's a little few story things, and judging by the name Crimson Vow, it has to do with, I forget how they put it, but like the biggest wedding in the realm. So we're not sure, or I'm not sure who the wedding is about, but I'm sure that'll get spoiled sometime soon.
And Innistrad is part of the Magic the Gathering multiverse?
Yeah, it's one of the planes in,
okay,
in Magic the Gathering. You know, it's, you know, vampires and werewolves. It's the spooky plane, if you will, the Halloween plane.
I guess it's equivalent to Ravenloft in Dungeons and Dragons, because the Dungeons and Dragons part of Hasbro has been releasing a lot of Ravenloft settings, and Ravenloft is very popular, from my understanding.
Right, yeah, they just released a book for that very recently. So I'm assuming that it's all tied together, you know, again, thematically with the spooky season.
And are there any other horror games coming out now that it's Halloween, or Halloween is fast approaching?
So the only thing that I've played recently, back years ago, the company Valve, the ones that, you know, they own Steam and they own the Half-Life franchise and Team Fortress and Counter-Strike is another big one. They released two games called Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2. And there hasn't been really any talk about Left 4 Dead 3, typical, you know, Valve games. They release amazing ones, but then end up not really releasing too many more. So a few guys that made the Left 4 Dead games made a studio called Turtle Rock, and they just came out with a game called Back 4 Blood, where it's very, very, it's the spiritual successor to Left 4 Dead. And the gameplay is, it's four, they call them cleaners, where they have to go out and rid the zombie horde in the towns and cities and stuff. And it's just getting from point A to point B with your other cleaners. And, you know, it's melee combat or, you know, first-person shooter, you know, with a whole bunch of different guns. But what makes Back 4 Blood kind of unique in the game sphere of that style of game is that there's a card and deck building system to it. So it's, you know, it's tying a couple things together where before you leave for your mission, you choose which deck you want to bring with you, you know, out on your run through your just different acts and stages for the mission. And before you start, you choose one of the cards that is in your opening hand, if you will, and they'll give you, you know, benefits to, you know, ammo capacity or you know, more health. And the more powerful ones give you crazy effects, but they also have a downside to them, where there's one that gives you, you know, 50% reload speed, but you can't aim down the sights. You have to hip fire your gun. But, yeah, so it's been pretty fun. I've been playing that for a few days. It's definitely a game where it benefits from playing with friends. The more people you have, the better it is, so you're not just playing with the computer bots kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so that's the only real horror game-esque I've been playing, you know, zombie-themed.
Are zombies still as popular as they once were? I remember when zombies were the thing. Are they still the thing? I know that they're still
I feel like that their popularity is a little waning at the moment. You know, and all those monsters come in waves. They get, you know, vampires would be very popular, and then zombies and whatever, and vampires.
And werewolves. And
yeah.
Well, if you like Halloween, it's a good thing, or horror movies, if you're a horror movie fan. Zach, is anything new and exciting happening on the board game end?
So I haven't gotten any Halloween-themed ones, but there is a sequel that I'm kind of excited about. So there was a board game called Horrified, which was focused on the Universal Classic Monsters. The idea was each monster was a different objective to complete. So maybe for the creature from the Black Lagoon, you're trying to navigate your boat to its secret. So it uses the same basic board for all six of the monsters, but then there's like little tiny board add-ons for each unique one. They recently released, I think it releases this month, a sequel called Horrified American Cryptids. So instead of the Universal Classic Monsters, it's Bigfoot, it's the Jersey Devil, it's the Badlands Banshee, the Chupacabra, etc. So I'm thinking I'm going to pick that up because I was interested in the first one, but then this is definitely more up my alley. So I think I'm going to grab that. I have been playing it's like a haunted Western board game called Grimslingers. So the idea is it takes place in a realm called the Forgotten West, and it's a place where magic is rampant, as well as all sorts of crazy machinery. And there's a character called the Iron Witch, who is some kind of otherworldly robot-type wizard who has been going around and collecting people and turning them into Grimslingers. He basically kills them and reanimates them and gives them the ability to use spells, and he's trying to, like, use them as agents for something. And the game's art is phenomenal. Some of the characters, they're all Western-themed, but, like, they all have little otherworldly qualities about them. There's a particular few favorites of mine where one character is a Siamese cat with, I think it's like a gun on his back. And he's carrying the crystal of the human that he used to run around with because their soul got trapped in it, and he's trying to bring them back. One of them is a tiny little Doberman puppy with a big katana on his back. So the characters are all fun and weird, and so the gameplay is pretty cool. You can play in standard dueling mode, which can be two-player or up to six, and it's just last person standing, or you can play in teams. And the idea is every player gets the same hand of the six elemental spells, but they also get dealt a couple signature spells that only they have. And so the idea is you just keep going around until one person's left. You chip at each other's health, you have to spend energy to cast spells, etc. But where things get interesting is there's also a campaign mode. So the base game comes with a campaign called the Valley of Death, and it kind of like sets the story for you've finished your training for the Iron Witch, and now he's sending you out to start doing the things he wants you to do. And you move around on a board, you check in a storybook, and like it'll have brief snippets of like lore about each location and then possible actions that might occur. As you travel around, you fight different animals and NPCs. So there might be bandits, or maybe there's a giant scorpion, stuff like that. And you can also play through this in the co-op. So you can have up to four people going through the campaign mode. As you go through it, you slowly get new signature spells. You increase in level to increase your hand size, your health, that kind of thing. And then there's also an expansion called the Northern Territories, which I got with the game as a bundle, that adds a whole second campaign and more detailed like power sets for some of the existing characters. So I have played through the dueling, and I am starting the campaign tomorrow, so I am excited to see how that goes.
Oh, awesome. And this is a board game? Because it sounds a lot like a role-playing game, the way you described it.
Yeah, it's a board game. I believe it was originally published on Kickstarter. The company is Greenbrier Games. I'm not sure what else they published. But when I was at Origins, it's been on my list for a while, and they were selling a bundle of the base game with the expansion. I figured, you know what, let me take it home. It's been sitting there on my wish list for like 3 years. You know, like, when not, if when I'm on vacation, you know?
Good. How was Origins, by the way?
It was largely disappointing for me, but everyone else I went with had a good time. there was a lot of organizational issues. This was their first time using the online registration software that they had, and so they overbooked a lot of games, or things would get canceled last minute, like DMs running stuff just wouldn't show up. So there was a whole bunch of organizational problems, which I think is due in large part to, you know, COVID and everything, that they kind of did this last minute, because usually the cons in June and they pushed it back to October, and then they didn't even release the events until the beginning of September. So
I imagine
it was all kind of cobbled together last minute, but I just had bad luck, where like all of our group of friends, like they had good games, their games would go off, but like a ton of mine got canceled or overbooked or, you know, it didn't turn out good, that kind of thing. Which, you know, that's just the luck of the draw. But there was a couple good things. The I mentioned on our last podcast, I did something called Artemis, which was a spaceship bridge simulator.
Yeah.
So that was actually extremely cool. Jamie and I did that as our first event. We got paired up with three other people who knew each other. And usually it's, I think, seven people, but we only had six because the seventh one didn't show up. So typically you would have, let's see, weapons, engineering, piloting, science, communications, and a captain. So I guess it would be six. And we didn't have a captain, so we just kind of like, you know, just took charge of it all ourselves. But it was very, very cool. So what they did is they set you up with a touchscreen monitor, and the room was, you know, darkened so that everything was easier to see. They had a big screen at the front that would either show a top-down map of the sector we were in or a third-person view behind our ship. And then each of our screens was tuned to whatever station we were supposed to be at. So, for instance, I was communications. So mine, it almost looked like an email inbox is the closest thing I could liken it to. And the idea was that I would be receiving communications from the star bases we had in the area, from friendly ships in the area that might offer us like side quests that would give us rewards, from enemies, and then on top of that, I could also communicate with all of those. So, for instance, if we were going to dock to repair damage and refuel, they would have to tell me which docking station we were going to, and then I would have to send a hailing frequency to them to let them know that we were requesting docking. Or I could communicate with the bases and say, hey, can you make some torpedoes or make some EMPs? That way the next time we would dock there, they could restock us on different weaponry. There was also a weird element where the science officer would scan things for weaknesses. Well, one of the weaknesses that he could detect were ways to insult the enemy captains. So if we were trying to lure an enemy captain to us, I'd be like, oh, ship designation Z9. You know, do we know anything about their captain? And he'd be like, says the captain, he's married, but he's really proud about his, like, service in his ship. But he's really insecure about his ugly face. And then, like, I would have different dialogue options to send to them, and so I'd have to pick the correct insult to lure them into chasing us. But it was really cool, because it was just constantly, like, yelling back and forth to each other. And so, like, Jamie was on engineering, so she was in charge of repairing damaged parts of the ship, and she could overload certain things if we needed to. So, like, let's say we needed to run away really fast, she could send more power to the engines, but doing so would overheat them. So she had to keep balancing how much coolant she had versus how far she could overheat things. And so, like, you know, I would get in a quest, side quest thing, and just saying, oh, like, you know, oh, science vessel Z29 is saying that if we, you know, pick up information from, you know, station one and bring it to them, they'll give us engineering coolant. You know, should I tell them that we're on our way? And then she, like, screams across the room. She's like, if the question is if more coolant, the answer is always yes.
That
was a lot of fun. It was very immersive. It was about an hour, I think, hour and a half. There was like a 10-15 minute little training video in the beginning, and then you just dove right into it. It was very, very fun. I would have loved to do that a second time or to do that again sometime in the future.
I've heard of that. You described it once before, and also other guests have described it. It's popular with people who are into Star Trek. Because you can simulate being aboard a starship, and a lot of these Star Trek clubs are structured like starships. So instead of the Artemis, you can be their ship, you know, in the adventure, in their experience, and it gives you something that tabletop role-playing or video gaming or morging won't really give you. It's something truly unique. I'd like to experience that one day as well.
The group we were with were very big Star Trek fans, and they were calling each other by Star Trek character names. So, like, the guy on weapons, they kept calling Worf, you know, stuff like that.
Very cool. So they incorporated
I have a few questions about that.
Have you ever played
No, I was going to say, I have a few questions about that.
Sure.
Jamie's screen, was it touch screen as well, where she was, like, dialing up and down the coolant levels and stuff?
Yeah, every screen was touch screen except for, I think, the pilot, who they had a joystick in front of their screen, like one of those, like, piloting joysticks, so that they could control the ship with that. So with Jamie's screen, she had kind of a three-dimensional grid of the ship with it was, like, lines with diamonds representing different nodes. So, like, this is the engine, this is the armory section, that kind of thing. And she had, I think it was three repair crews that she could send to different damaged parts to prioritize where things got fixed. And in the bottom half of her screen was kind of like sliders for the different parts of the ship, like the shields, the weapons, the engines. And so she could slide them up and down, and she had eight coolant canisters to distribute between them, and she could, like, rearrange, like, okay, I just pumped the engines to 200% and overheated them, so I'm going to put, like, four of the coolants on there to recover them quicker because I don't need the other stuff cooling right now, that kind of thing.
Right, okay.
The science officer, I couldn't see what his screen looked like because his laptop was on, like, the back of mine, so I didn't get to see what his screen looked like. The pilots alternated between the third-person view behind the ship, as well as it was kind of like vector lines, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, like, flight paths and stuff like that where he could try and see where enemy projectiles were coming in and that kind of thing. And then the weapons officer, their screen showed all of our, like, different missile bays, and they would have to pick different types of ammunition to put in them. They would also have to prime different things like an EMP blast, et cetera. And so they were constantly, like, doing that. Mine was I would get a lot of incoming messages, but then I also had a list of different things to communicate to on the left-hand side. So then I could say, okay, I'm going to select, Star Station 1. And then when I tap on the name of the place, it gives me all the dialogue options. So I could say, what's your status, which would tell me if they were under attack, what their health and shields were, if they were producing anything at the moment. I could request that they start producing things. I could request docking procedures so that we could recharge and heal. And there was a couple other ones, I think. And then, like, if I was targeting a friendly, I could find out more about whatever side quest they had, find out their status, and perhaps even say, hey, can you rendezvous with us so that we don't have to travel all the way out to you? Maybe you meet us halfway. You know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Neat. So I guess it's like their own proprietary thing, I guess, right? Like, they built it? Like, they built the game, I guess?
Yeah. As I think they've been doing it at cons for a bit over a decade and a half, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, do they take it to other cons, or is it like an Origins thing?
From what I know, I think that they do, because there's different ships, is I believe the way they explained it. So Origins is always Artemis, but the same like, company or whatever has, like, oh, this is the entrepreneurship, and that one's going to be a different con, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so each one has, like, different scenarios. So, like, our scenario was we had four star bases. There was a big stretch of, like, neutral space that we were in a peace treaty with some enemies about so that neither of us would enter. And on the other side of that, there was two stations from one alien race and then two other alien races each had one station. About maybe 5 or 10 minutes after booting up, once we got the hang of stuff, there was a declaration of war, and then we were allowed to cross the neutral space. And so we were trying to take out all the bases. We took out three of the four.
Nice.
They did a cool thing, too, where some of the enemies could actually hijack some of the friendly ships. So I would have to read the messages carefully, and like if they were giving maybe the wrong coordinates or the wrong ship reference to what they were in, it was enemies in the ship who were trying to lure us in to then shoot us. And I also had the ability to, as we built up like points, each station had like specials they could activate. So one of the things I could activate is I could choose a ship, an enemy ship, and it let me have an option to basically say that I had planted a spy there, and I could have them take over the ship so that the ship would stop trying to fight us. So I would wait until like we were like, oh, we're fighting like five ships, and then like I have the special, so I'll target the biggest one, the one that we're not firing at right now, and then I'll make it so that I have a spy there. He takes over the ship, and they stop attacking us, and now we don't need to fight them, and they're helping us take out the other one. Yeah.
All right. That's great. Super creative.
I had a lot of fun with the communications sector, because like that one, I think of all of them, like was the easiest to like get into, because the other one, the communication was here and there. I was constantly talking to everybody. So, you know, I was just like, oh, captain, this is, you know, kind of thing. And they'd be like, oh, we need the dock. And I'd be like, you know, where? And they'd tell me where, and I'd be, you know, like, docking on standby. Like, it was just constant, like, you know, ever-present, like, narrating kind of thing. It was really cool.
All right.
I had to, like, decide which quests were worth taking, you know, and filter out ones that, like, oh, okay, so we just docked. That means that we just recharged our batteries. This quest is going to recharge our batteries. We don't need this one. But this one's going to enhance our shield. So this one's worth doing, so I'll tell everybody about this one. You know, like that kind of thing.
Right. Last thing.
Now,
the training video was like 80s cheesy style corporate VHS.
They had like generic uniforms that like you could tell that they were supposed to look like the Star Trek uniforms, but they're not the Star Trek uniforms. Because they had a couple of people on the screen here or there.
Now, it's been around for a very long time. Have they like made it modular? Have they evolved it? Have they added different scenarios over the years? Or is it essentially the same game that they just keep bringing like a ride at a carnival or something where it travels from place to place? Or is it something that is modular and keeps growing and developing?
From what they told us, it's modular, because they mentioned, like, they have different modules of different time lengths as well. So, like, we ended up exploding. There was a glitch. We exploded, like, right away because we kind of, like, glitched into a meteor, and it just blew us up, like, literally 2 minutes into it. But because of the reboot process, they had to pick a different scenario time-wise because now we didn't have enough time for the one we were on. So, There's multiple scenarios, and from what they said, I'm pretty sure it's different at each different, like, ship con kind of thing. So, like, all the Artemis ones, there's probably, like, maybe 2 to 5 of those, but then the other ships might have other ones, too. And I'm not even sure, it might even be more than that, because we did Artemis Bridge C, and there was Artemis's Bridge A, B, C, and D. So I don't even know if those ones had different ones, too.
It sounds really fascinating. There was a video game years ago that was multi-screen and interactive that was very similar. I don't know if they had like a video game component where you could move around the ship and see other people. I think it was a Star Trek game, actually, but different people on different screens would handle different stations, and you had to run the ship together. And again, memories are vague, but coming back, I think it was a Star Trek The Next Generation game, though.
I think I've heard about something like that that they did with VR recently in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was official Star Trek or not.
Yeah, I think it was like Star Trek, like Bridge Control or something like that. I was just about to talk about it. I've never played it, but I've watched a bunch of people do it, and supposedly it's like one of the better like VR games that like, you know, is really immersive. And because, you know, a lot of the problems with VR stuff is when you get into the motion, it gets people sick, so they try to do, you know, unique ways to do movement in games. But with this one, it's like Zach, like where you're just at your station. So there's a bunch of different things. I think by what how you're talking about Artemis, it seems like the VR Star Trek game is pretty similar, and like in you know how it plays out, if you will.
Yeah, it's, I think I watched a couple of videos of people trying it when it came out too, and it looked like a lot of fun.
That
yeah.
was with the movie universe Star Trek. I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was something earlier than that with the Next Generation also. I don't remember how old, but I remember something very similar came out many, many moons ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a bunch of PS2 Star Trek games. I was never I was more Star Wars than Star Trek. My mom was passively into Star Trek, but it was more a Star Wars household, if you will. Claudia, my girlfriend's best friend, is a huge Star Trek fan. She goes on, like, the Star Trek cruise and everything. I think for her birthday at Christmas one time, we got her some of the PS2 Star Trek games.
Wow. I have some of those somewhere. if the flood didn't get them, I have a bunch of Star Trek games on PS2 and earlier from the Nintendo Super Nintendo and maybe Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they had one, but yeah, that's a pretty old franchise and not as much as Star Wars, but pretty much. They also created many game portals into their sci-fi universe.
Yeah. Like I said, I played more Star Wars games and consumed more of the Star Wars media than the Star Trek growing up.
Can you recommend any other like sci-fi exploration games? I see commercials, and again, I don't remember the name, but there's one that seems totally incredible. They seem to have a really vast universe and excellent graphics, and it's an open-ended universe. You can do pretty much what you want. Again, I don't remember what the world was called. I caught it while looking through YouTube. It was one of the commercials.
Most recent big one was Cyberpunk 2077, where the launch was a little rough. I had my fun with it, but I understand people's frustrations with it. But it's probably that because they've been updating the game, so they're trying to do some more advertisement and push to get, old people back into it and the new people that kind of avoided it in the beginning. So it's probably Cyberpunk. They're the same people that did The Witcher, actually.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I know there's a very large MMO called, I think, EVE Online that is basically exactly what you described. It's a giant open universe. And you can be trading companies, you can be pirates, whatever, but you're just flying through space and you get to, like, design your own ships and stuff. But I know it's one of those ones where you have to pay a lot of money to get good things.
Yeah.
All sorts of issues where, like, you're carrying, like, a ship that's, worth, like, real life, like, maybe $100, and there's cargo in it that's worth, like, real life, like, $20, and then somebody comes and blows up your ship,
Yeah,
I know
I
it's supposed to be extremely immersive and fun. It's just, you got to be in for that kind of thing.
All right. There's like a real life, quote unquote, economy in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Where stuff's worth actual money and everything.
Then there's also Stellaris, which a bunch of my friends play. Do you know the game Civilization?
Yes.
Sid Meier's Civilization?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a space version of that on steroids. Where,
okay.
Like, there's, I think at this point, there's, like, 80 or 90 different alien races, and you can, like, this is going to be a culture that is military-minded, or this is going to be a religious cult planet. And then you slowly, like, spread out. There's a lot of diplomacy between other players and the computers, but you're just trying to, like, take over as much of the galaxy as you can.
It sounds like a lot of fun. I've been playing with, recently I played Pick Your Path type of books, but with Hercules and Greek mythology. Then I got into these intermediate type of games that were board games or role-playing games that you could play solitaire that incorporated Greek mythological motifs. And now I'm playing with something else. I'm playing with Oracle cards and how you can use them in gaming. And I gave a brief review at the opening of the episode. And also journaling type of thing. There's a system, the Heroes Journal Magic Academy. And it's very cartoonish in its presentation, but it offers a very interesting premise. They start you off as in the book, they introduce the premise. You're basically studying in a magic academy and you're out to find your destiny. And then you identify what your destiny happens to be or what you believe it to be. And then you go on a quest in the real world to fulfill that destiny. So they have you, after introducing you to the concept, every day you need to fill out a journal that, like, for instance, today I'm grateful for, today's allies, today's threats. And they remind you on every page of what your self-chosen quest was, and then three things you did on that day to seize the day and move you forward on your quest. And then they give you breaks throughout the book. You know, they give you some thoughts to think about, or they explain something in greater depth. There's a bestiary in the back and maps. So it's structured very much like a gaming experience, but you play a game in your real life. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's been done before, but these guys were very clever and very professional in how they did it. And I'm having a lot of fun doing it. And I'm always going off on quests and doing things anyway. So I figured I'd have some fun doing it in someone else's playground. And I highly recommend that book. I'll be covering those type of books as well in the immediate future.
So there's one, it's not related to Greek myth, but there's a really, really well-received one that came out in the past couple of years called Thousand-Year-Old Vampire.
Oh, wow.
The idea is you can get the PDF if you want, or they sell it as like a beautiful hardcover journal. Start out by developing your character, deciding what time period they start in, like how they got turned into a vampire, etc. And it's basically, just like you were saying, it's your journal. And what you do is you, it'll give you different prompts. You like roll to see what prompt you should go to. And the core mechanic is because you're 1,000 years old, you can't remember everything. So you have a list of core memories. And as time goes on and new prompts come up, you'll have to choose ones to get rid of and replace with new things. So you might have maybe had a feud with this one family that then turned into vampire hunters, and they came after you for generations, but then you forgot about them. And then they come back, and you don't know who they are, you know, like stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So it's got like a really core mechanic that encourages good storytelling. I was this close to buying a copy at Origins, but I got a different game instead because they had a couple people who were selling like a whole bunch of indie like RPGs in like hardcover formats that I'd never seen for sale in person before. So I ended up going with one called Dialect, which is a game about language and how it dies. It focuses on a community in isolation for some reason you guys come up with, and then you slowly come up with language that they would have made in their isolation. So the example they give is, let's say you're a colony on Mars who then gets cut off from Earth. You have no contact with the home planet. It's just the, like, 300 of you in the colony. So you're going to start coming up with unique phrases to fit your term, you know, your place. So maybe, you know, it's difficult to travel by yourself because of all the dust. So when someone goes outside, they always stay in radio contact with someone that they trust. And, you know, you eventually, like, whatever, like, maybe they called it, like, an ensign or something, that they would call it, you know, call in this person. And over time, that gets shortened to SE. Because it was SE, it was, like special equipment or something like that. And so then you make it the word ESSIE. And so you would refer to a close friend as an SE. And you come up with the language of these people and why the words came about until eventually I think it's that they then meet another society and their language kind of bleeds out into whatever that is or something like that. I haven't gotten to play through it yet, but I'm very excited for that one.
Is that a single player?
No, it's. I think you could do it single player, but it is meant to be played in a group.
You have me intrigued.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Icarus.
Yeah.
You always pick such unique and different games, Zach.
I have weird interests, and so every once in a while I find something that lines up like perfectly with my interests. I just played two of them. You would like. Where they're more storytelling games than board games or RPGs.
Uh-huh.
They're like a collective storytelling experience. So the one, it's called For the Queen. The idea is there's 14 different cards with full art illustrations of different queens, and the group picks one that's their queen. They, you know, whatever reason, maybe, oh, this card looks the coolest, or, you know, maybe she, like, this person looks like they have something in their past. You know, like, whatever reason, you pick a queen, and then the game starts. The queen is going to a country that you have been at war with to try and broker peace, and she has only chosen whoever is playing to accompany her on the journey instead of taking, like, a full army or anything like that. It's only these few trusted people. So you start out not knowing who you are, and the way the game works is every turn someone flips over a card from the deck. And the cards will ask a question related to the queen. So, for example, it might say, there was one specific time that the queen gave you a compliment that really stuck in your memory and you have never forgotten it. What did she say? And so then you have to come up with it, and you slowly build your character by defining your relationship to the queen. And you keep going around answering questions, or you can say, I want to hear your character's answer and pass it to somebody else if you don't like the card. And then eventually, in some, like, bottom quarter of the deck, a card comes out that says, the queen has come under attack. Do you defend her? And everyone decides if they do or not, narrates what they do to work together to make an epilogue, and that's the end of the game.
Oh, wow.
And we did a similar one called Rusalka, which is based off of the Slavic myth of the Rusalka, is a water nymph, I guess. Sometimes the spirit of a drowned woman. Sometimes they're benevolent. Other times they're vengeful. So the idea for the game is each one of you is a Rusalka who all live in the same pool of water. And each turn, one player is someone, I think the word they use is a seeker. And so you're someone from the village nearby who is coming to the Rusalka maybe to ask for some kind of magic, to ask for advice, to ask for information. You know, like, you get a brief card that gives you an idea, a sketch of what this person is. So then you role play approaching the pool and making your entreaty. Other players as the Rusalka then role play giving you different options. So they have hands of cards that maybe say, I will give you, like, this is approval, I'll give you what you want. Or this is complication, because I'll give you what you want, but there's a price. Or I refuse, and also I'm going to curse you. And so everyone keeps taking turns as the person requesting something. And you keep going around through, I think it's four acts, and each act is like X amount of time apart from each other. And then finally you close out what happens over the course of the game.
Wow. And your mind must work very you're an out-of-the-box thinker, I'm imagining, too, because you adjust very quickly to all these ways of looking at a reality and interacting within it. How does this affect the rest of your life? It must give you tremendous advantage in very many areas. I know being a dungeon master for years has given me phenomenal advantage in many situations.
I'm very good at managing groups of people. is a big one. Like, I usually find myself in leadership positions because I'm so used to, as you said, like, DMing and stuff, and kind of getting a handle on everybody, making sure everybody's okay and has a good time. And then I'm very creative. So I'll come up with weird solutions to problems. you know, people are like, are you sure that's going to work? I'm like, I'm pretty sure. And we try it and it works. I'm like, yes. I read a lot. And so I just, you know, I said it before. If I had to pick one word to sum up who I am as a person, it's storyteller. And to me, fiction and stories are one of the most important things that we have as human beings. And no one will ever be able to convince me otherwise, no matter how many people say, oh, genre fiction isn't important. If it's a fantasy or sci-fi book, it has no merit. Anything, any fiction that you can find yourself believing in some capacity is worth it in some regard.
I believe that as well. And Tim, you're very good at taking your dreams and making them into realities. And Level One Games is just one example. What other advantages does being a gamer give to you in your daily life?
Well, like Zach said, like it helps you, you know, come up with creative solutions to problems that you run into. You know, especially with the store, there's, you know, a million things. Like, as you know, as a business owner, you know, the stuff comes up and you got to get real creative real fast to try to figure out some solutions and make it a more positive, better experience for everybody.
And when you play games with people in the store, do you notice, like, what do people need? What type of experience do people need the most? Like, do they need video games? Do they need board games? Do they need role-playing games? Do they need card games? What is the most popular, and why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Video games are, you know, a great way, and board games as well, and RPGs too. Are a great way to, you know, escape, you know, reality and get immersed into, you know, a fantasy or whatever genre that you see fit that you want to get lost into. And like for Magic, a lot of the guys that come, you know, they come because, you know, long day at work, and they can sit down and play some cards, you know, with friends that they maybe only see, you know, once a week or maybe even once every 3 months, you know, at pre-releases, and, you know, just to escape from, you know, not the doldrums of everyday life, but, you know, just to escape for a few hours and be in the company of, you know, good friends and good people and, you know, I don't know, brings up the spirit that helps a lot.
And can you see any dreams, gaming taking you like in a new direction in the future?
Oh, another dream would be, you know, hopefully, you know, we can get another store somewhere and continue what we're doing on the, you know, and brightening people's days. And, you know, that's the dream right now, you know, open up another and keep moving forward. And yeah.
Because games are like the ultimate dreams, you know, objectified and accessible in some way. So you have kind of like a travel agency that takes people into portal to different universes. So that is really, really cool. Is there anything that either of you see in terms of the future of gaming? Because gaming has evolved, certainly. In my lifetime, it's evolved. Like the world I was born in didn't even have role-playing games. You were playing, you know, like you played as a kid, but maybe with rules, like miniature soldiers or something. So there were no video games. Video games came out when I was toward the end of high school. And I remember when Pong came out, it was like an amazing... you know, technological achievement and very immersive. And now we have VR and we have interactive gaming through the internet. We have programs that can even create maps and have you sit at a role-playing game table with people who are far away. Where do you see gaming going in the future?
I always think about where, you know, the question is like, how much better can video games get? Like, how much better can they look or whatever, you know, you always think that it's already been done before, but somebody comes out with this new groundbreaking thing or just a new spin or twist on, you know, an old formula. Like I always think about 10 Candles is such a unique, you know, mechanic or way to play an RPG. So people are always coming out with interesting new ways and takes on stuff. And I've mentioned the Ghost Ship RPG where a guy made a whole, you know, vinyl or a whole record of music to go along with an RPG.
Uh-huh.
You know, so people are always coming out with, you know, creative ways to tell interesting stories, or, you know, this one is based on true events, possibly.
That sounds awesome. Zach, how about you?
I think we have started to reach the point where a lot of these kinds of gaming are finally getting recognized as being a force for good. Because there was that whole big stretch when they first got popular, video games, RPGs, both, where they were looked down upon. They were looked at this thing that would slowly degrade people who played them and make them not good people to be around. The satanic panic of the 80s, all the times they tried to say that video games were responsible for violence, when literally every study has proven that video games reduce the amount of violence that people who play them would then go out and perform. And I think we finally started to reach a point where it's tipped the other way, and we've realized, oh, hey, not only can these things be good for you on a physical level, so now they have some senior citizens they found perform better reflexively when they practice playing video games. So it helps them out when driving as the reflexes start to fade. And they've, you know, said, okay, so there's physical benefits, but then also look at the senses of community that these things are founding. Look at the way they're connecting people who may otherwise not have ever met. And I think as this continues to move forward, as the hobby continues to grow, that's only going to get exponentially more and more recognized.
That is a very positive thing. And I remember the satanic panic and how ridiculous it was, but how real people thought it was. And when I worked years ago in the Department of Psychiatry in a city hospital in New York, I was using role-playing games back then. And the most dramatic, example I can give of the therapeutic use of games is I was working with somebody that only said his name and a couple of other words, and everybody thought he couldn't talk. And I discovered that he liked comic books. So I brought the Marvel, the TSR's Marvel role-playing game in, and we found, you know, once I'd explained the game to him, that he couldn't talk as himself, but the Incredible Hulk and the Thing, who he greatly identified with, could talk. So in the game, playing the games, he was able to communicate as the Thing and as the Hulk. But it took him several years, but he was eventually able to communicate as himself. And that's miraculous.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
It really shows the power of it, and that's, they've done so many studies where they find that children who have been abused, role-playing games can help them kind of get a sense of their control of their life back. Prisoners in jails, they find that people who engage in role-playing when in prison tend to go back to prison less. The recidivism rate drops because they start to empathize. They start to look outside of themselves and identify with other people's feelings. And it's just, it's an incredible thing when you think about it, that these pieces of paper and these little hunks of plastic can have this much of an influence on who a person becomes.
Right.
And something worthy of a show, Tim, after you finish, I'll suggest it now, just so you have more time. I would suggest we devote a show just to that, to all the positive effects of gaming in its many forms. Sorry, Tim.
Right. Yeah. No. I was going to say that I've told the story in the past, but one of my favorite feel good story from the store was a young boy that came in and was having problems in school and not really reading and, you know, just being defiant, and he learned to play Pokemon, and that long story short, you know, made him change, you know, in school, and he learned how to read better, and now he's, you know, an activist, for lack of a better word, and, you know, growing food for the needy, and he's doing a whole bunch of civic duties at his school, running clubs and everything now.
Oh, awesome.
I'm super, super happy for that, and it's just a lovely family, and so they helped me move to my apartment. They're just great.
Very, very cool. I have more stories, as I'm sure both of you do, but we'll leave them for the show. So next show we'll focus on that as well as what's new and exciting. How can people get in contact with you, Tim, and how can they visit Level 1 Games?
Best way to get in contact online is level1games.com, either through Facebook or Instagram. You can find us. The address is on there. We're right on Route 23 in Pumpkin Plains. Whenever we get new product, we just got a whole bunch of new dice and dice bags and everything. We're gearing up for the holiday season. So we post a bunch of pictures on Facebook and Instagram of all the new stuff that we get, new trades and everything. So anything you see, best place is to find us on there.
And I'll put a link to Level 1 Games with the promo for today's show. Thank you so very much. And Zach, how can people get in contact with you and enter your worlds?
Well, you can always reach out to me on Facebook or send me an email at Mr. Moonin, MRMUNNIN at gmail.com.
And for each of you before we go, and we'll start with Tim. Tim, what can we look forward to between now and the end of November, the middle of November?
I'm glad that you asked. I didn't want to put Zach on the spot, but real quick, we're playing a game of 10 candles the day before Halloween.
Awesome.
I'm looking forward to that story and see what comes of it. There'll be a good rundown the next time that we talk. I'm super excited. I'm very, very excited for the group that we're playing with. I think it'll be good. They know how to play, some good serious RPGs. So it'll be a good time.
Awesome. And Zach, can you share a little bit more about that? And is there anything else that you can add to it?
Yeah, so I'm actually running two games on October 30th. One is a game of Dread, and one is a game of 10 Candles. So the Dread one I'm running in the afternoon. That one, I'm working on the outline of the story right now, because Dread, you do need to have something prepared. 10 Candles is pretty much all improv, so I won't know anything about the story until we sit down to play, because the core mechanic is that one of the players hands the DM a card that says something about, like, what the monsters have been seen doing, and then the DM has to come up with everything based off of that. So it's entirely built on the fly.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
It's a very good creative exercise.
And I will, by that time, given the floods and the social media problems on Facebook and all sorts of other things, it's been delayed. But I'm finally starting a podcast for the Star Trek thing that I spoke of long ago, so that'll be happening sometime in November. So next time I'm by the store, I'll have some leaflets to leave there for folks in the area.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I connected with the USS Justice, which is the Star Trek club that's out by you, and we're going to be focusing on that in the first podcast. So we'll be getting some activity your way. Thank you so very much. You're awesome. I always look forward to this time. I wish you both the best, and I hope I'll see you soon.
Yep. Thank you very much. It was lovely talking.
And thanks to everybody who joined us, whether you called and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous amazing adventures. And in our last fraction of a minute, we'll play If You Can Dream. Thanks again.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if